Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 4, where we'll begin at verse number 5 to get our context back in our heads again. Remember that Joab, the long-term commander of the United Israeli armies, is dead. He's been murdered by David's two nephews, Joab and Abishai, because they've borne ill will toward Abner ever since the death of their brother Asahel 2 years earlier at the onset of this civil war that's been going on between the house of Ishbaal and the house of David. Well, David has been grieving over the death of Abner and buries him with great honor and distinction at Hebron, and even forces Joab and Abishai to grieve over his death as well. But he can't take any action against them for this murder because they're just too powerful. They're just too connected for David to feel that he could accomplish anything against them. Well, that was bad enough. That has probably slowed down the process of David becoming king over United Israel, something that Abner was going to work on. But then things are complicated even more by action taken at Mahanaim, the fortified city that has served as the safe zone for the administration of Ishbaal for the past 2 years. It's over on the east side of the Jordan Valley. And this is how that assassination took place. Chapter 5 of 2 Samuel 4. Now the sons of Rimmon the Berethite, Rechab and Baana, set out, and about the heat of the day, so that's the middle of the day when people are taking siestas, they came to the house of Ishbaal as he was taking his noonday rest. They came into the midst of the house as if to get wheat, so they pretended like they were just coming in to get supplies, and instead they crept up to wherever it is that he was resting. And it says they stabbed him in the stomach. They murdered him in his bed. And then Rechab and Baana, his brother, escaped. And when they came into the house, as he lay on his bed in his bedroom, they struck him, they put him to death, and they beheaded him. And they took his head and went by the way of the Arabah all night. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth, or Ishbaal was his circumcised name, to David at Hebron. So they figure with Abner dead that everything is going to slide David's way anyway, and that they might be able to find some sort of high position in David's administration if they were to end the life of the man that was in opposition to David's reign, that is Ishbaal, the prince of Saul, the surviving prince of Saul's family that had become king under Abner's leadership. And so they murder him, chop his head off as a war trophy or as a proof of death, and they make the overnight journey down the Jordan Valley and eventually up to Hebron. It's a 2-day journey, so they really pushed themselves. And they brought the head of Ishbaal to David at Hebron, and they said to the king, "Here is the head of Ishbaal, the son of Saul, your enemy, who sought your life. He who is has avenged my lord the king this day on Saul and on his offspring. So they're all upbeat about it. We bring you good news. Your enemy is dead. Here's the proof of his death. God has done this for you. Verse number 9. But David answered Rechab and Baanah his brother, the sons of Rimmon the Beerothite, as he who is lives, who has redeemed my life out of every adversary, or out of every adversity. When one told me, behold, Saul is dead, and thought he was bringing good news, I seized him and killed him at Ziklag, which was the reward I gave him for his news. How much more, when wicked men have killed a righteous man in his own house, on his bed, shall I not now require his blood at your hand and destroy you from the earth? And David commanded his young men, and they killed them and cut off their hands and feet and hanged them beside the pool at Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbaal and buried it in the tomb of Abner at Hebron. So David is infuriated that these two Benjamites thought that they were doing him a favor by assassinating a man that he apparently had respect for. Now, David is about 32 right at this moment. He's been on the throne of Judah for 2 years, and he became king at 30. We know from another passage that Ishbaal was 42 years old when he was killed, when he was murdered. So there was only about 10 years difference between the two of them. And he has known him ever since David was a teenager. When Jonathan, Ishbaal's slightly older brother, took David under his wing. So in effect, David has kind of grown up with this man that has just been murdered, whose head was just brought suddenly into his presence. And he is grieved over the loss of Ishbaal, because he knew that arrangements were already in the process to allow Ishbaal to live out the rest of his life in peace. Because he'd made a promise, that is, David had made a promise to Jonathan that he would not annihilate Jonathan's relatives once David came to the throne of United Israel. And these two horrible men have ruined the opportunity for David to keep his promise, and has complicated even more the turnover of the kingdom fully to David. And so he has them executed, and their bodies put on display for the day for everyone to see that he had nothing to do with the death of Ishbaal. Well, we don't know exactly how much time passes until chapter number 5. It's possible it was a few weeks, maybe a few months. It is possible, depending on how much fallout there was from the murder of Abner and the murder of Ishbaal, maybe a few years. But eventually, all of Israel gets together, as Abner had intended, as Ishbaal had apparently agreed to declare David king over United Israel. So let's turn our attention to that ceremony. 2 Samuel chapter number 5, verse 1. Then all the tribes of Israel came to David at Hebron, and said, "Behold, we are your bone and flesh." Now that's meaning we're all Israelis. We're all descendants of Israel, Jacob, the son of Isaac, the grandson of Abraham. "In times past, when Saul was king over us, it was you who led out and brought in Israel." So this leadership council acknowledges to David, not only are you a fellow Israeli, but you're also the hero of the army. You are a high-placed commander in the military under Saul. You're the guy that took out parties to do military action and brought them back again. And, continuing in verse 2, "He who is said to you, 'You shall be shepherd of my people Israel, and you shall be prince over Israel.'" Now, we don't see that specific prophecy worded anywhere else. It has been hinted at a few times, but it has something to do with the fact that Samuel had anointed David when he was a child, and that Jonathan later acknowledges his understanding that David was fated, intended by God, to become the king over united Israel. And so that's being acknowledged widely now by these leaders, that God is the one that wants this. Verse 3, "So all the elders of Israel came to the king at Hebron, and King David made a covenant with them at Hebron before he who is, and they anointed David king over Israel." Now, the same wording is found over in 1 Chronicles chapter 11, verses 1 through 3, with one addition to it, and that is that all this happened according to the word of he who is by Samuel. So Samuel seems to have spread out the information about David being God's choice for king. Now, back in our 2 Samuel 5 passage, verse number 4 kind of jumps ahead of the story a little bit. It says, "David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years total. At Hebron over Judah, 7 years and 6 months. And at Jerusalem, he reigned over all Israel and Judah 33 years." So David officially became king when he was made king of Judah at Hebron by the people of Judah. So he was 30 years old when that happened. 7 years and 6 months later is when he moved into Jerusalem as the new capital of united Israel. And that becomes very significant for the capital city being transferred to a place that no tribe had ever had control of, and also a city that was on the border between Benjamin tribe, which was the tribe of the first king, and the Judah tribe, which was the tribe of the second king. So we'll talk more about that selection of Jerusalem later. So sometime after the 2-year period, but before the 7.5-year period, that's when all of Israel had this official ceremony making David king of united Israel. 1 Chronicles chapter number 12, starting at verse 23, gives more detail about this official ceremony. And I was wanting to read it for us today. 1 Chronicles 12, 23. "These are the numbers of the divisions of armed troops who came to David in Hebron to turn the kingdom of Saul over to him according to the word of he who is. The men of Judah bearing shield and spear were 6,800 troops. Now, that's not the entire Judean army, I can guarantee you. This is the official group on the day of David's coronation as the king of all Israel. Verse 25, of the Simeonites, mighty men of valor, 7,100. Of the Levites present, 4,600. The prince Jehoiada of the house of Aaron, and with him, 3,700. Now, this would be one of the leaders of the Levites and the priests that we're talking about here. Verse 28, Zadok, a young man, mighty in valor, and 22 commanders from his father's house. So Zadok, who might be a priest himself, he comes with a military presence as well. It's sometimes forgotten that there was a security detail associated with the tabernacle and then later with the temple. And so that might be what we're seeing here referenced. Verse 29, of the Benjamites, the kinsmen of Saul, 3,000, of whom the majority had up to that point kept their allegiance to the house of Saul. And so that's significant that these guys were loyal to Ishbaal up to his assassination by fellow Benjamites, and then they put their loyalty fully into David. Verse 30, of the Ephraimites, 20,800 mighty men of valor, famous men in their father's house. Now that's a lot of people. Of the half-tribe of Manasseh, 18,000 who were expressly named to come and make David king. Of Issachar, men who had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do, 200 chiefs and all their kinsmen under their command. So 200 chiefs might have as many as 20,000 foot soldiers under their leadership. Of Zebulun, 50,000 seasoned troops, equipped for battle with all the weapons of war to help David with singleness of purpose. Of Naphtali, 1,000 commanders, with whom were 37,000 men armed with shield and spear. Of the Danites, 28,600 men equipped for battle. And of Asher, 40,000 seasoned troops ready for battle. And of the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh from beyond the Jordan, 120,000 men armed with all the weapons of war. So this is a really big turnout from all over the tribal regions of Israel coming to show their support for making David king of united Israel. Verse 38, all these men of war, arrayed in battle order, came to Hebron with full intent to make David king over all Israel. Likewise, all the rest of Israel were of a single mind to make David king. And they were there with David for 3 days, eating and drinking, for their brothers had made preparations for them. And also their relatives from as far as Issachar and Zebulun and Naphtali came bringing food on donkeys and on camels and on mules and on oxen, abundant provisions of flour, cakes of figs, clusters of raisins, and wine and oil, oxen and sheep, for there was joy in Israel. So this is a massive coronation ceremony, lots and lots of people in attendance, so it needs lots of provisions. And the party goes on for at least 3 days. And thereafter, David was counted as the king of united Israel. At this point, I want to jump over to 2 Samuel 22, where David has a song that he sings, composed for this time when he becomes king over all of Israel. This psalm is one of those few psalms that's found completely outside of the book of Psalms. So 2 Samuel 22, David spoke to He Who Is the words of this song on the day when He Who Is delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. So I think it's composed once he has the full kingdom. He said, "He Who is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield, the horn of my salvation, my stronghold, my refuge, my Savior. You save me from violence." So we've got all of these glowing accolades given by David to God for making him the king of Israel after all of the troubles that he's had. "I call upon He who is worthy to be praised, and I'm saved from my enemies. For the waves of death encompassed me. The torrents of destruction assailed me. The cords of Sheol entangled me. The snares of death confronted me." So David says, there were the times that I thought I was going to die. I was going to be gone. Verse 7, "In my distress, I called upon He who is. To my God I called. From His temple He heard my voice, and my cry came to His ears." Now, that's not a reference to any type of earthly temple. It's a reference to where God actually is. "Then the earth reeled and rocked. The foundations of the heavens trembled and quaked because He was angry. Smoke went up from His nostrils and devouring fire from His mouth. Glowing coals flamed forth from Him. He bowed the heavens and came down. Thick darkness was under His feet. He rode on a kerub and flew." The kerub were the four-faced, four-winged angelic creatures that we see in the book of Ezekiel. They were the ones that could be found in the decoration of the Ark of the Covenant and of the tabernacle itself. So David is apparently, from what scholars say, David is grabbing a hold of some imagery that the pagans had used about Baal and says, nope, it's really God, He who is, that is in charge of creation, and He comes as the rescuer, the great warrior God to come to our rescue, and He's come to my rescue, and He rides upon His cherubim to come to my rescue. Verse 12, "He made darkness around Him His canopy, thick clouds, a gathering of water. Out of the brightness before Him, coals of fire flamed forth. He who is thundered from heaven, and the Most High uttered His voice. He sent out arrows and scattered them, lightning and routed them. And then the channels of the sea were seen. The foundations of the world were laid bare at the rebuke of He who is, at the blast of the breath of His nostrils." Now, it sounds a little bit like a storm just overwhelms the battlefield. And David may be remembering a time when that's exactly how God gave him a victory. Verse 17, "He sent from on high, He took me. He drew me out of many waters. He rescued me from my strong enemy, from those who hated me, for they were too mighty for me. They confronted me in the day of my calamity, but He who is was my support. He brought me out into the broad place. He rescued me because He delighted in me." So David gives praise to God for saving him away from his enemies. "He who is dealt with me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands, He rewarded me. For I have kept the ways of He who is, and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all His rules were before me. and from his statutes I did not turn aside. I was blameless before him, and I kept myself from guilt. And he who is has rewarded me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness in his sight, or my cleanness in his sight. So clearly this psalm was composed before David screwed up later in his kingdom. With the merciful, you show yourself merciful. With the blameless man, you show yourself blameless. With the purified, you deal purely. With the crooked, you make yourself seem tortuous. You save a humble people, but your eyes are on the haughty to bring them down. For you are my lamp, O he who is. My God lightens my darkness. For by you I can run against a troop, and by my God I can leap over a wall. This God, his way is perfect. The word of he who is proves true, and he is a shield for those who take refuge in him. So you can appreciate the emotion of this moment that David is celebrating how no matter what's happened in the past, God stuck with him and honored his heart that was after God and gave him the victory. Now, we're clearly not going to get through this whole psalm, so let's push forward a little bit farther, and then we'll save this to kick off tomorrow. Verse 32, for who is God but he who is? And who is a rock except our God? This God is my strong refuge and has made my way blameless. He made my feet like the feet of a deer, meaning very fast, and set me secure on the heights. He trains my hands for war so that my hands can bend a bow of bronze. So David says, God made me able to be a warrior. You have given me the shield of your salvation, and your gentleness made me great. Now, notice that we've got the imagery here of God providing armor, very similar to what later shows up in the Isaiah passages, and then eventually what Apostle Paul puts in Ephesians chapter 6. Well, let's mark our spot right around there, and I'll see you next time we get into God's Word.